right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking frozen people? Jesus, man. How's it going? I'm sorry if you're out there and you're freezing to death. Literally, I am sorry that you're going through that. There's nothing worse than being cold and not being able to get warm. I hope you're okay. I hope you have quilts. I hope you have a space heater. Don't set yourself on fire. I don't know what's going on with where you are, but we used to do it the tenement heat way. I don't know if you're in New York. Do you have that radiated? Are the radiators freezing? Is the hissing stopped? Has that horrible dry heat hiss? You got to put a baking tin full of water under those things, or you'll just, you know, all the liquid will be taken out of your body. Sorry, name that tune. That's my fucking radiator in New York City. I tell you, I've never been more grateful to be in California when it's not burning than at this particular moment. Everybody was like, you got to move to Texas. I think I'll wait. I think I'll wait on the big move to Texas. Not that it was on the menu, but I guess this is the way it's going to be all over. Erratic weather. Who knows? Weather beyond what we can handle with the structures that we've put in place. The infrastructure we built was not for almost unsurvivable temperatures and conditions. So either we fucking do something to maybe stop the escalation of this, or make better hats, make better boots, make better jackets, make better pipes, make better infrastructure. You know, some of this shit has not been updated since the turn of the century. I don't know where you're from or what town you're in, but infrastructure is a backburnered item most of the time. So some of that shit that you guys are relying on might be from 1904. But again, I hope you're taking care of yourself. I can't imagine. Well, I can. I've been in some pretty gnarly 2 or 3 day snowstorms. But to not have power, to not have heat, that's just fucking awful. Kick on those burners, man. Is the gas working? Is the natural gas working? You got a gas stove? I guess this is going to be the era of guns and generators. You better get your guns. You better get your generators. You better learn how to store your food canned. Can some stuff. Make some pickles. I don't know. It's not what I'm doing. And I guess some people have been doing it for a while. Get that jerky going. No human jerky. Do not make human jerky. All right? I don't care how cold it gets. Don't eat your family, God damn it. All right? Have some soup, okay? Sam Neill is on the show today. I'm very excited about it because I didn't know what to expect, but we had a kind of a lovely conversation. You know him from Jurassic Park, The Hunt for Red October, The Piano, and lots of films he's made in New Zealand. He's a native New Zealand person. He's also known for his many vineyards and his two paddocks wine. He was at the farm on one of his vineyards when we talked to him, people. He was like in a bar of his own building, of his own creation, in one of his vineyard buildings with a bunch of wine behind him. I said it wasn't video so he could start drinking. He's also become sort of an online favorite with his social media videos of him singing songs and hanging out with farm animals and drinking his wine, I might add. Sam Neill, great conversation. I'm having a raw time, people. The assumption I made at the beginning of this shit show was true, that that as this thing goes on, you will become more acquainted with who you really are. And I'm not so sad to get down to the baseline. I did just spend a couple hours on Twitter reveling in the death of Rush Limbaugh. I was happy to know that my armor comes up pretty quickly. I think I got out while I was ahead, or at least even. But look, the honest to God truth is, yeah, having done talk radio, it's not that I don't have him in perspective, or it's not that I don't understand that he was a capable and pioneering broadcaster. No one paused better than Rush. And I can say that honestly. That if there's one thing that he brought to the table, it was letting something sit for a minute after he said something terrible. After he celebrated the death of somebody, or the bullying of the vulnerable, or the pain and sickness of those he judged and disagreed with, was as he reveled in their demise, in their pain, in their deaths, he would let it sit there for a minute. As if to let you revel in the evil fucking piece of shit that he was. Rush Limbaugh, and I'm talking about Rush Limbaugh, was an evil, malignant piece of garbage responsible for more deaths and more brain fucking than any broadcaster in history. Many of us have lost relatives to Rush's show, to his way of thinking, to the rancid garbage he put into people's brains. He was proud of it. He was proud at laughing at the pain of others and causing pain and hatred. He loved it. Fuck him. Good riddance. So what I was saying was, in terms of figuring out who you are, I got kind of off topic there. And now I'm just trying to stop myself in the midst of this ongoing anxiety and sort of inability to sort of function, and the anxiety of waiting to get a vaccine, of waiting to get some sort of normalcy, of wondering how things unfold, and just dealing with the day to day, the day to day, the day to day, today of the day, the same day. I have to fight my desire to do dumb little things, man. I wanted to go replace the cartridge on my turntable and switch out my turntable. That can wait. No, I masked up and did it. One of my rugs is coming unraveled. I know there's a rug repair place around the corner here, but that can wait. Like those weird things. Like I literally have to say to myself, dude, you don't need to do that. Dude, you don't need to run to the fucking supermarket for smoked paprika. You don't even need it in a recipe. Just because I lock in, I get obsessed, and I think, gotta go do it. Mask up, go do it. But you don't have to do that stuff. That's a daily struggle with me when I'm alone during the day, is not to go to a store or to a place or do a thing that is fucking completely unnecessary. Huh. Gonna get a kitten in a few weeks. Probably going to call him Mingus. All right, here we go. Sam Neill. The new film, another great film. Beautiful small movie this is, called Rams. It's about two sheep farming brothers in Western Australia who are at war with each other over their prized breed of rams and come together kind of in the face of adversity. Maybe. Do they? It's available now on all digital on-demand platforms. And it's a beautiful movie. I highly recommend this movie, Rams. It's a great story, and it's so tight, so simple. Characters are beautiful. Farmers in New Zealand or Australia, in Western Australia, and this tension, this family tension. Heirloom, beautiful heirloom sheep. There's a lot of goat testicles in this movie. And the handling of goat testicles. Now, if that doesn't get you in, I don't know what will. Sam was at his vineyard in New Zealand when we had this conversation. And you'll notice that because I'm not doing stand-up, when I got an audience, I'll keep trying to get some laughs. He was great. Truly a joy to talk to Sam. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer, and I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF. Neil. How are you, Sam?
I'm fine, thank you, Mark.
Nice to meet you.
I see you've got Gimme Shelter behind you. Was that the movie about Altamont and all that?
It definitely had Altamont in it. It was the Maisel brothers. That was the one. They set out to make an exciting, fun documentary about the Rolling Stones tour, and then it turned into a fucking demonic nightmare.
Yeah. But I heard a reassessment of all that cast the Stones into a much worse light than you would have it.
That's true. I read a book. There's a book that was written by a journalist in San Francisco. And it turns out that the Stones were just awful from the get-go, that there was no precautions taken, that no one was prepared for anything, and they didn't care.
Yeah, it was actually a really chilling account.
Well, what was chilling about it was just how out of control it got, because there was no bathrooms, there was no doctors, there was no water, and they didn't expect that many people, and like 100,000 people, however many came. It was just insanity. No one was there. It was chaos. And then there was this bad drugs going around. Everyone was out of their mind. The stage was like 3 feet off the ground, Sam. 3 feet with no security, but it was crazy.
I know. And people wonder why I don't go to festivals anymore.
Scary. Did you used to go?
The last time I went was actually in Ireland, maybe 10 years ago.
In Ireland?
In Ireland, yeah. It was kind of cool. It was good. It was out in the middle of nowhere, and there was so many more good bands than I expected.
It's a nice way to spend the day.
It was a good way to spend. They had like tents with different things on. And
sure.
Yeah, you always had a choice of like three things at any one time.
Who are your bands? Like, who do you like?
Who do I like?
Yeah.
Oh.
Who are your go-to bands?
Okay, my ideal festival.
Yeah.
I'd need to revive them, but I need Little Feet with Lowell George.
Oh, nice. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Probably headlining.
Great.
I'd like Randy Newman in one of the side tents.
Oh, Randy's great.
Yeah, I don't want him on the main stage. I want him in a side tent so there's just 100 of us and Randy, you know?
He'd feel better about that. He doesn't need the pressure. You know, he's hard on himself.
I tell you who I also saw live, and to my complete surprise, they were about as good a thing live as you could possibly imagine, was Radiohead.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't imagine them being a great live band. They were fantastic.
Great live band. Really? Why wouldn't you imagine that? Because they're sort of enchanting somehow, you know?
Well, they're not exactly rock and roll. You know what I mean? They're right. Sort of... it's kind of miserabilist rock. And you wouldn't think that would be a good day out. But, oh, my God, they were fantastic. Tom York was really compelling.
They get into a zone. They're great. I saw you sing a Randy Newman song from Sail Away. I think it was on Sail Away. What is that, Instagram or Twitter? What do you do the little movies on?
God, what did I dare to do on that? Yeah. I'm
Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton, Ohio, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a kind of a safe song. I wanted to do Sail Away, and I thought, oh, no, maybe not everyone gets Randy Newman. Not everyone gets irony. Not everyone understands that he's.
Yeah.
It's not him.
Yeah.
It's a character. You
he
know?
Wrote, he wrote one of the best songs ever written. That song, Guilty, is one of the greatest songs ever. Do you know the song Guilty?
Oh, it's incredible.
Oh,
it's
my
incredible.
God. That song kills me. I can't get through it without crying.
I know. And it's a great song to cover too, you know?
Yeah, it's a sweet song. And then like, I like the Last Night I Had a Dream. There's a lot of, I had him, I interviewed him once for a couple hours. It was one of the high points of my life.
What a great thing to do. I was listening the other day to, it's hilarious and grotesque. I Love L.A.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a great, that's, yeah. Yeah. He's such a, he's so funny, man.
And dark, too, you know.
Yeah.
How dark is You Can Leave Your Hat On?
I love that song. Yeah.
But it's dark. It's so dark and creepy and strange.
What about Let's Burn Down the Cornfield?
Oh, God. The list is endless, isn't it? We need 5 hours with Randy.
Yeah, man. He's great. So are you in is that a bar? Do you have a wine bar in your house? What's going on in that room? Did you think?
No, I have four vineyards. Yeah. And this is kind of the principal one.
Mm.
And it's midsummer. And the vines are in full, are pumping at full rate at the moment. My cattle and my sheep are over there.
So wait, you have four vineyards and each one of them has a house on it? Is that what you're saying?
This isn't the house. This is, if you come to my vineyard, this is where I will pour wine down your throat liberally.
Well, you know, I would I don't drink anymore, but if you can get me citizenship, I might need it, and I'll let you do that. it's getting a little dicey here. I don't know if this great turn of events is going to save us. So I don't know how many people. Do you know many Americans who have run away down there? Do you have friends from show business, Sam, that have bought palatial chunks of property down there?
I don't have any. No, huh. It's mostly, I believe, the chunks of property have been bought by people with something called hedge funds. I don't know what hedge funds are exactly. I think we all need one because they reap great profits from whatever these things are. But
they're a bundle of different stocks run by a few guys, and those guys take other people's money and gamble with it on their hedge fund stocks. And some of them make a lot of money. I think that's my limited understanding of it.
Well, we're in the wrong business. We need to gamble with other people's money.
I have no idea. Sometimes I don't even know how I'm getting paid. I just assume the guy I call, the guy who tells me I'm great and they want me, he also tells me I got paid. So I just have to trust that guy.
Yeah. I am that guy around here. At any one time, I have about 10 people working for me.
Yeah.
So I'm the guy that I'm the guy that everyone depends on. And I have to say, there is no money in, I don't like to tell them that because they're all working for me in a wine capacity.
Right.
there is no money in wine.
So what is it about the wine people? I mean, is this just a way of you servicing your alcoholism? I mean, how?
Yeah, it works. It works that way.
It seems like a lot to do for, you can just buy a few bottles a day.
I know that a sane man would do exactly that, Mark, a sane man. No, in my case, it's kind of historical. I have family. I've found out that I got family that goes back to 1805 and growing wine, and my father
in
my
Ireland.
That was in Sicily.
Oh, you have Italian family?
He wasn't actually. What's that noise?
I don't know.
Is that you or me?
I don't think it's
someone
me.
Upstairs. Is that someone upstairs having a good time?
It's the ghost of your great grandfather. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
That was a man called Benjamin Ingham, and he went to Sicily and made a fortune from Marsala.
Oh, I see. So he was not Italian.
He wasn't Italian. No, he was a Yorkshireman. But on the Neil side, I'm fourth generation, possibly fifth in wine and spirits. But I'm the first one I'm the first Neil to grow wine.
Wait, so you're the fifth generation in wine and spirits, but you're the first one to actually make their own? Is that what yes. you're really telling me?
Yeah, the others were merchants and were drowning in it.
Is that the I don't want to be stereotyping, but is that the Irish line, the Neils?
That's the Irish line. Yeah.
Yes. What part do you spend time in Ireland at all?
I have, but and in fact, I've worked in Ireland two or three times, and I love going back, and I kind of feel weirdly at home. And I tell you, there's something about Ireland that kind of makes me feel comfortable. And I've always puzzled as to whether that's because my first 7 years were there, or if it's a DNA thing.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't want to burst your bubble, but I'm 100% Ashkenazi Jew, and I have the exact same feeling in Ireland. So, So maybe don't lean on the genetics so much. Let's go with the other thing.
But Marc Maron sounds entirely French to me.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. There, it does look French. It sounds French, but it isn't. It goes all the way back to like Belarus, I think. Pale of Settlement, pogroms. You know, I come from a line of tailors and people who own surplus stores.
Yeah, it never pays to sort of go back too far. I think Stephen Fry's family. You know that series, Who Do You Think You Are?
Yeah, no, but we have one here similar.
Yeah,
Finding Your Roots.
Yeah, Finding Your Roots, and whenever anyone says Belarus or something, it always ends up with some grotesque thing that happens in the.
Yeah, that's the Pale of Settlement people. Those are the Jews, right?
Yeah.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, or pogroms or some.
Sure, yeah,
thing.
Yeah. No, it doesn't generally end well for the Jews. Like, yeah,
no.
It seems like the Jews that ended up in America and maybe in England, they're only there because they were running away. That anywhere there are Jews surviving, it's because they left in a hurry.
Wisely.
Yeah. The ones who got out under the wire.
Yeah.
But okay, so you come fifth generation spirits, but you're the guy that made the investment. You're the one that did it. Do you have, like, are you a wine nerd? Is that what it is? Because, like, I don't drink anymore. So I enjoyed wine, but it seems like it's one of those things, like, there's no end to what you could obsess about.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Mark. I love wine, but I'm not crazy about it. I'm not exactly wild-eyed about it. But I look, it's more, of course, I deeply care about this. I care about what's in the bottle.
Is that one of yours?
And I'm wildly ambitious that this should be the greatest wine in the world.
Yeah.
I have no ambitions as an actor at all. Never.
No
have.
More. Oh, really?
But I started off very humbly and modestly in wine.
Yeah.
And my ambition gets more and more out of control every year.
Right.
And you know what, Mark? I think I'm getting close to it. I think I'm getting very close to making the greatest wine on the planet.
Oh, that's great. That's great that, you know, all you need to do is believe that, Sam. No one can take and no one can take that away from you, all right?
Please don't present me as some self-delusional fool from the South Pacific.
I'm not. You're just you're a good audience, and I don't talk to anybody. I'm all alone here, Sam. This isolation thing's starting to get to me.
Oh my God, I completely understand that. Not only that, when you get out of isolation, which I finally did in December, when I got out of quarantine here, I sort of wanted to go back into isolation. I'd become so institutionalized that people walking, unguarded in the streets, unmasked,
terrifying,
kissing each other, breathing everywhere. It completely freaked me out. I'm in a state of absolute chaotic a terror.
Yeah, I can't. I talked to my friend in New York, and he said his son is taking the train downtown. I'm like, a train? A train? What? You going to let him back in the house?
Yeah, that's right. I love. So where are you? Where are you holed up?
Glendale.
Glendale, where's that?
Los Angeles. I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay.
But I'm okay, man. It's all right. I'm working it out. I'm figuring it out. I try to talk to people. I was doing what you were doing on Instagram. I make videos every morning. But you do yours are like a minute, 2 minutes. I'm on there for an hour just talking to
what?
To a live audience of about 800 to 1,000 people in the morning, just wandering around talking to my cats. I play records for them, and then. And then by the end of the day, it gets anywhere from like 10,000 to 25,000 views. Like that's how bored people are here. They'll watch me make coffee for an hour, you know, at some point during their day.
And you're doing it on camera.
Yeah, do it on the I do it with my phone. But you know, the great thing about show business right now, at least here, is that I have the same production values with my phone as the Tonight Show has. So no one. No,
everybody. That is true.
Yeah.
And a better set. My God, you got Mick Jagger on your set. Look at that.
Yeah, exactly. But wait, so you had no ambition as an actor ever?
No.
So how'd you get into it?
Every time I get a job, I'm completely astonished. Who are these fools that want to employ me?
It's that attitude they love so much.
I don't know. Harrison Ford's turned them down.
Yeah,
obviously. You know, everybody's turned.
Where's Sam Neill?
I'm number
wine.
27 on the list.
Does he still act? I don't know. He's making wine. Well, just
is he alive?
Yeah.
Is he alive?
Call him up.
How old is he now?
But how did you get? Why did you get started in it?
I didn't really mean to. I didn't really. I never imagined that I would get into acting as a career.
Yeah.
I knew I loved acting, and I started at school, and it was therapeutic as much as anything. I underscore that by saying I really, really don't like drama as a therapy. But it was therapeutic for me because I had a very bad stammer as a child, and I stuttered very badly, and I hardly spoke for 14 years until I sort of gradually started to get some confidence as an adolescent, and I realized on stage I could actually speak clearly, and that gave me the sort of courage to actually talk to people and talk to adults, for instance.
Yeah.
And then when I left university, I got a sort of pretty ordinary degree in English at university. And I left there thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do. I would have liked to have gone to drama school. There wasn't any drama school to go to. I would have liked to have gone straight into acting. There wasn't really any film being made in New Zealand in those days. And
what was going on there? Anything? What did you do? What did people do in New Zealand? What did your dad do?
He was in Wine and Spirits.
Ah, so in New Zealand. Oh, he was actually there. He had a liquor store.
Yeah, they were merchants. Neil and Company Wine and Spirits merchants.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and he was he said to me, "You need to get a job," and I realized it didn't. There was no chance of acting as a career. There just wasn't any work. So I got a job working as a in documentary film, and I trained as a film editor. I became a director, and then I did that for 6 or 7 years. While I was doing that, I would sort of moonlight in one or two of my friends' little films, little short films. And a guy called Roger Donaldson spotted me in one of those films and cast me as the lead. Again, I thought this guy is crazy.
Yeah.
In the first color feature film ever made in New Zealand, and the first film that had been made for 20 years.
Wow.
It was a film called Sleeping Dogs. And that sort of, and then I went back to making documentaries. Someone saw me in that film and they asked me to come to Australia and act in a film called My Brilliant Career opposite Judy Davis.
She's great. That's a big movie.
Well, that went to Cannes. And I realized when I got to Australia that for the first time in my life, people said, you're actually really quite good. I said, what? Yeah, no, you're good. You're a good actor. Oh, come on, pull my other leg. And then I started making a good living as an actor, and that took me to England and points beyond. So it's sort of, and I'm still surprised. It's actually 50 years, someone reminded me rather cruelly in an interview earlier today, since the first time my face was seen on celluloid.
Yeah.
It was in 1971 or something like that.
That's a long time.
50 years. It's a hell of a long time.
Well, let me just ask you though. Like, so you did all that. You were 6-7 years in documentaries. What does that mean? Is there some amazing business in documentaries in New Zealand in the late 60s? I mean, how was that an employment? Like, what were the documentaries about?
Yeah, well, it was the New Zealand National Film Unit, and it was a government. Most people worked for the government in those days.
Okay,
We made films for government departments, a lot for tourist and publicity.
Uh-huh.
And occasionally we'd get a film, we'd make a film for ourselves. And so my very first film was for the New Zealand Post Office.
Ah.
It was about telephone courtesy.
Ah, you know, yeah.
How to answer a phone and not offend people.
And that was, you acted in that film?
No. I wrote it and directed it.
Oh, so you had to bring another guy in, huh?
Yeah, I cast my friends in these roles that I'd written. The New Zealand Post Office ran the telephones in those days.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Different days.
I mean, like, so what do you tell me? So at that time, did you know everybody on the island? I mean, how was there a lot of people there? Like, were you?
In those days, there were 2.5 million people in New Zealand and 70 million sheep.
Wow.
We were vastly outnumbered by the sheep.
And what are the, I don't want to be ignorant, but what are the indigenous people called?
Maori.
Maori, right.
Yeah.
And now was there a dynamic between the Maori and like your family or people in general when you were growing up? I don't know what the situation is there.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. I grew up in the South Island, and there's very, very few. There were very few Maori people in the South Island in those days. Things have changed considerably. Like indigenous people, pretty much everywhere, there's disadvantage and a fair amount of poverty too.
Yeah.
Up in the north. But things are changing rapidly, and the Maori people were, it's very different from Australia, for instance. There was a treaty called the Treaty of Waitangi that was struck between the Crown, the British, and the Maori people in 1840.
Okay.
And since the 90s, the Waitangi Tribunal has been redressing grievances and returning land and compensating in a monetary sense for loss of lands and deprivation one way or another. So while it's not perfect, I think we're a very different society than the one I grew up in. People are much more respectful and aware of Maori traditions and te reo, that's Maori language, and actually very proud of how integral Maori people and Maori culture is to New Zealand society.
Yeah, isn't Taika Waititi Maori, part Maori?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I just watched that movie. It's still in my mind because I watched that movie that you were in, you know, The Hunt for the Wilder People. And was that kid Maori as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a great movie.
Yeah. I think it's kind of a sort of central to the story of New Zealand now too, that film in a strange way.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. It has a sort of healing quality.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of wounds, a lot of blood in the soil in New Zealand, there were in the 1860s, 1870s, what were known as the Maori Wars when I was growing up. It's now known as the New Zealand Wars or the Land Wars.
Uh-huh.
And there's still a lot of bad blood, but a film like Wilder People has the effect of bringing people together rather than separating them. You
know? Yeah, it's beautiful. So it had a profound effect on the culture there, that film in particular. It played well there.
I'm not sure about profound, but it had a big effect. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful movie. And I mean, and I, you know, it's just sort of interesting. I watched the Rams movie as well. And I like this version of you, this kind of like, you know, beaten down, aging, emotionally stifled.
Yeah, curmudgeonly. Yeah. I read somewhere once that Gregory Peck would make notes on his scripts, but on most pages he would put these three letters at the top of the page, N-A-R. And someone asked him, what does N-A-R mean, Mr. Peck? He said, no acting required.
Well, I mean, it seems like, you know, what kind of animals you got on the vineyards there? You got, what is that, a farm? Do all vineyards have animals? How does it work? Do you have to have animals? What do you do with the animals? You're making wine. Are you butchering animals too? Or you milking them? What are you doing? Do you make milk?
No, I don't make any milk. I love the innocent premise of that question. Everything we do here is organic. We make organic wines. We've used a lot of biodynamic principles. Uh-huh. For instance, animals are absolutely integral to those procedures. So,
okay.
Highland cows have big, scary horns, and they're sort of shaggy. And they produce, to put it as pleasantly as I can, the best manure possible for and manure is absolute. We're all about soil health. Mm. And for soil health, you need good compost, good manure, because you're restoring nitrogen to the soil. I'm getting really boring now, Mark. I'm getting into this, nerdy, techie thing.
It's okay. But we're talking about poop, and that's always good. You know, people enjoy poop talk. Like,
it's refreshing, isn't
it? Yeah. As long as it's not too sciencey. So you have these very exotic kind of, prehistoric looking animals that you just have around so you can collect their shit. I mean, so you're shit farming with the cows to make the soil better for the wine.
Yeah. Yeah. Good shit, good wine, you know.
So that's, how many cows do you have just for this purpose? Like, what's the herd number?
I think I've got 12 or 14. We just had a few new calves. I haven't had a head count for a while, but I think it's about 14. At last count, I've got about 30 sheep. They also do the same thing. They're on weed control too. You know, they instead of spraying the place with foul chemicals from
Monsanto. Yes, you do. Monsanto.
Well, like Monsanto, right. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. So you sheep poop to kill bugs?
Weed control. Bugs aren't such a problem here, but weeds, we get a lot of competition from weeds.
So sheep poop kills weeds?
No, they eat the weeds.
Oh, got it. Okay, got it. So how many sheep you got?
You've got to get out of the house more, Mark.
I'm learning the secrets of farming. I know that I'm familiar with the eating of the, I learned a lot with the sheep movie that you were in. But So how many sheep is there over there?
I think about 40 at the moment, 40 or 50.
And do you name them? Do you shear them? Do you make wool? Do you have people come in and make wool?
I do name some of them, and those are the ones that I don't want to end up on somebody else's plate. I have one called Jeff Goldblum, who is a retired ram, and he's a good friend. He's I can see him actually at the moment. He's up the top under a power pylon up there. Very nice ram.
Is he neurotic and speak in a strange kind of rhythm?
Yeah, there's a lot of humming and hawing.
Well, that's nice. So there's no one's getting killed unless because like you know in two movies I've seen you in, there was just a massacre of animals. And I'm happy to know that it's like just terrible. It's just terrible.
No, there's look. I have to say, look, if you want the sordid facts, in any given year we might get 24. I think we got 24 lambs this last season. 12 of those will be boys, and 12 of those will not. And the boys will not make it to the you know, we bring in a new ram. You just need one ram for the flock.
Yeah.
And the boys, they'll have a happy life, but not necessarily a very long life.
Okay. Fine. Now,
It's tough. It's tough on the farm.
Why?
It's tough on the farm.
What? Oh, yeah. Because you got to, what do you do? Do you eat them?
I do.
Yeah.
You
don't have to be ashamed of that. I would think that even people, like, you're doing it correctly. You get to know them, and then you tell them to look the other way, and you murder them, and then you chop them up, and you eat them. Not, everything's used. You make soup with the bones? I mean, if you make soup with the bones, you get the bones of the dogs? How many dogs you got over there?
I just have one dog who's sleeping outside and scratching.
Okay.
Are you scratching or sleeping? Oh, sleeping.
So right. I guess, like, okay, here's a pressing question. In the movie Rams, your new film, which I enjoyed a great deal.
Good, thank you.
Are those prosthetic testicles or are those actual balls, you know, on the...
Those are real balls, Mark. Okay. And you have to tilt your hat.
Yeah.
You have to tilt your hat, tip your hat.
Yeah.
Tip to it. Your average ram. There is no animal so prodigious on the planet. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
A good ram can cover 80 females, 80 ewes in a given day.
Huh.
80.
Huh.
Now, even the worst sex addict from your town can't come anywhere close to that.
No. They've tried, but it doesn't end.
that's right.
Back in the day, you know, some guys got close.
80.
That's what I hear. There was a time, Sam.
But that's why they need very, very big testicles.
I get it.
Per body weight, they're the biggest balls on the planet.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, it's good to know. I don't know what to do with that information. I was going to make a joke, but I couldn't come up with a name quick enough.
Just slowly process.
Yeah.
Sleep well, you know.
Yeah, I love the movie. I like both of those movies. I like the older movies, too. So, like, you didn't train as an actor. Were you just learning on the job? Were there directors that gave you some hints? Were there co-stars that you had that said maybe you should think about, you know, doing it this way? I mean, how did you pick it up?
I think listening and kind of working it out for myself. And in the old days, we used to have... what they call dailies or rushes.
Sure.
And we would all go file into a screening room a day or two after you'd shot that day and watch those dailies. And I learned a lot from that, just going, oh my God, what did I think I was doing there? Oh no, it's worse. It's worse. Don't do that again.
Right.
And I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot from other actors just watching and observing who I liked and who I didn't like. And that guy's good.
Who? Like who?
But also, so many. I mean.
Like what was one of the first guys you're like, oh my God, I got to figure that out. That was great.
I think I was processing that very early on. I was a big fan actually of British movies when I was growing up.
Uh-huh.
I like people like Dirk Bogarde and James Mason.
Yeah.
Those sort of actors.
Oh, yeah. James Mason's great. I just watched those a couple of the Joseph Losey scripts. I just watched. What was the one with Anne Bancroft? Was it Pumpkin Eater? Was that it? The Pumpkin Eater?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That was brutal.
I love those Losey films.
Yeah,
do you know what I think? It might be the greatest film ever made, and I haven't seen it for a long time. It may have dated, but The Go-Between.
Oh, I gotta watch that.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Is that a Losey film?
Yeah, Julie Christie. It's a fantastic, fantastic film. Edward Fox.
I just watched The Accident, and because I'm watching there on the Criterion Channel, they got all these Pinter scripts. So I watched The Accident, which I think had Dirk in it, and I watched The Pumpkin Eater, which had James Mason in it, and who was the lead in that? Peter Finch.
Yeah, Peter Finch, Australian. Yeah. Interesting actor.
Yeah, yeah. I remember. I've seen Network many times, and that was the last movie.
Yeah, that was his last film. But it was Laurence Olivier that encouraged him to leave Australia and seek his fortune elsewhere, and the rest is history.
Yeah. What about did you like Olivier?
Yeah, not so much on film. You know, there's not a lot on film that I particularly cared for.
Why not? Do you think? What was about the other guys? You could see their personality?
I don't know. They always kind of smacked of the theater a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas James Mason was made for cinema. Mm. He's so watchable.
Yeah.
So watchable. And does seemingly so little, but so little can speak so much.
I know that's, I mean, you learned that. So that's what you learned from him. Cause like, you know, it's my instinct, you know, when I act, like I come in always too hot, too, just out of control takes, like, but that's fine. You know, it gives me a lot of leeway. You know, turning things down is easy. Actually, either way, I like being directed. You?
I love being directed. And one bit of advice I got very early on, I've never forgotten it, was if in doubt, do nothing.
Huh.
But that's only if you're in doubt, I think. Doing nothing isn't enough. And sometimes I see actors doing nothing. I think, well, come on, do something.
Well, I think doing nothing.
That's insufficient.
Right. I think doing nothing and being engaged is different than doing nothing, actually doing nothing. Sometimes I worry about my hands. Did you ever worry about your hands? Like, what am I doing with my hands? Like, you know, because like film, Jeff Daniels said to me, he said, you got to learn how to use your face because most of film is face.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm a mouth breather, so that's tricky. Every time you cut to me, my mouth is going to be open. I'm like, wow. If I look at myself on film, I'm like, why is my mouth fucking open? Can't just tell me to close my mouth.
Well, the moustache helps.
Yeah, a little bit. But I can't be aware of everything. You know, that's something that's deep. I just never breathe through my nose. Like I can't worry about that while I'm acting on top of everything else, like to breathe through my nose. But
I tell you, I think the best motto I ever heard was, what is acting?
Yeah.
And I think it's, and this sums it up better than anything I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Is pretending to be someone else, but really, really meaning it.
Yeah, right. And that's all you need to know, really. Either you got it or you don't.
You don't need to go to drama school. You just remember that shit.
But do you feel like you've gotten better over time? Of course, right?
I hope I have.
You're always pretty good, though. I mean, I even remember, like, I don't know the really, I can't remember if I saw my brilliant career, but I remember the Damien movie. That was scary.
I wish people didn't remember that.
Really? Why? It's so, like, you know, that was one of the great characters, the Antichrist. You have a problem with the...
I wasn't very happy with my performance, but I thought...
What was the problem with it in your mind?
Oh, I just wasn't very good. It was very early days, but I'll forgive myself for it.
How many movies have you forgotten? You must have forgotten a few.
Yeah, I've forgotten most of them. But someone said it was 75 movies or something like that.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
But you can't remember all of them.
No.
But I thought the problem with playing the Antichrist and the gift is this. It must be the loneliest job in the world, being the Antichrist, don't you think?
I don't know. Ask our last president.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it is kind of.
Yeah, I don't. There's no way a buffoon could be the Antichrist. If you're going to be the Antichrist, you're going to be really clever, aren't you?
I guess.
Otherwise, you're not. The last president was a complete buffoon.
Yeah, a dangerous buffoon.
A very dangerous buffoon. Never give. Never arm a clown. If you're really the Antichrist,
yeah,
you can't go around saying, can I take you out on Friday night? Oh, this is nice, isn't it? Another martini. By the way, I'm the Antichrist. Yeah. People are just going to run screaming, aren't they?
They're going to go like, sure you are. Okay. Okay.
Come on.
You're scary, man.
I've heard that. Yeah, all the guys tell me that. I'm the Antichrist. And it doesn't turn me on. Get out of here. Yeah.
Take another, do it, another angle, new angle. So you thought he was too human. That was your problem?
I felt kind of sorry for him. It must be so lonely, you know.
But that's good,
so
though.
Bleak
that's
and
good.
Lonely.
Good. Yeah. I've seen guys overplay Satan, you know? I mean, Pacino just chewed up the scenery in Devil's Advocate, man. Yeah, I mean, it's like, right. Wow. And that's... It's a lot of Satan. A lot of Satan. Hello. Come on.
He's chewed a lot of scenery. So I don't remember him chewing scenery in the early days. Do you remember? I don't think he was chewing scenery.
No, it all happened after Scarface. Scarface was the turning point. And then everything was like.
What happened in that film?
He just was talking loud.
Too much fun?
Yeah, yeah. No, he did Tony Montana. But you know what? It was Scent of a Woman, too. Hoo-ha. You know, and then, but he can still do it, Sam. Did you see him play Jack Kevorkian? Great. He was great in that. The HBO movie.
I haven't
movie.
Seen that, no.
He can still dial it way down. He comes in a little hot because he's got a lot to prove now. But he can, if you want him to take it down, he does biopics now and he's very good at it. Have you ever done a biopic?
Yeah. Yes, I did. I played a sort of, very famous kind of Trump-esque mining magnate from Australia.
Oh, yeah. What's that movie called?
His name was Lang Hancock, and he made a fortune from just he flew over these hills and said, "Why are these hills red?" I realized they were, like 90% iron, and he became one of the wealthiest men on the planet.
Wow.
From just that little insight.
And so he just strip mined all of New Zealand or Australia? Australia?
Australia. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there seemed like some people made a lot of money in Australia. The cattle money, the Kidman family, but I found out it's not Nicole. Right? That.
No, sadly.
Yeah, I interviewed her recently and I was like, so come on, tell us about, you own half Australia, right? She's like, no, that's not me. So that was a good question.
Yeah, she might have really been that Kidman, but she's always said no.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it, unless her dad was like the black sheep of the family.
Right. Yeah.
You worked with her. That was a big movie, right? Which movie was that? Dead Calm, right?
Dead Calm. Yeah, and
she was good always, right?
Oh, she was fantastic. I'm not sure if that would be appropriate these days. I think I was 41 and she was 22 or something like that.
The characters are in real life.
Well, we weren't dating. We were just in the movie together.
No, I get it. But I mean, that was the, you're implying that the relationship on screen wasn't appropriate, correct? I'm not saying you were dating.
No, it's just, I don't know. There's a lot of sensitivities about.
Look, I've done material on it as a comic. I've talked about dating younger women. I did a joke years ago on Letterman and I got an email because someone saw it and they're like, maybe you should, figure out how to take that down. I'm like, you just want me to erase my history? It's a good joke. Are you going to start scrambling to. It was on television, man.
Whoa, God.
It's like, that's not going to happen, buddy. But, so what happened with James Bond? I mean, that could have been a game changer. Am I bringing up touchy stuff?
Is it? I almost always get asked about this. I went to it. I was sent along reluctantly by my agent in the early 80s. They're darling, they're casting a new James Bond, and you should be the new James. I said, I don't want to be James Bond. Darling, I'm telling you to go. So I went, I had this excruciating audition. And A, there's no way I want to do it. And B, there's no way they're going to offer it to me. And they didn't, which was a relief. So I didn't have to say no. But I tell you what I would have dreaded about it, because today, I mean, it's like being branded somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would go to if I'd done that, I would, having spoken to you, I'd go down for a coffee at my local village.
Yeah,
and there would be people I don't know there would go, oh my God, look, that's James Bond over there. That's the one I always that's the one I always hated.
The bad Bond.
There's the crap Bond over there in the corner. How sad. And you'd be that would be with you for the rest of your life. So I dodged a bullet there one way or another.
Dude, I have not watched a James Bond movie in 40 years. I think the last James Bond movie I saw was a Roger Moore James Bond movie. I missed all the Timothy Dalton ones. I don't care about it anymore.
Yeah.
So which one would you have been? The one that Dalton got?
Dalton got that gig, yeah. And
you know that guy?
To it. I've met him once, I think, in a car park, you know, as you do.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen one Dalton Bond. And then wasn't there another Bond, too, that I – before – didn't – Remington Steele. What's that guy's name? He lives in Hawaii. He's Australian, too.
There was George Lazenby, an Australian. He did one.
Yeah, what about the guy who lives in – Hawaii. What's his name? I can't remember.
The guy.
Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Pierce was very good. And he always wanted to be James Bond. He was very good at it.
Where's he from? Is he Australian?
He's Irish.
Irish. I saw him in that movie. I watched a Bob Hoskins movie, The Long Good Friday. Bob Hoskins plays a British mobster. And Pierce Brosnan plays one of the IRA thugs. I've been watching old movies a lot because what else are we supposed to do? I don't have a vineyard or sheep. I've just got, you know, I'm in my house. I smoke fish. I've got a smoker and I've been making fish. That's what I do.
Wow. What do the neighbors say about that?
It's not a big operation. I'm talking one piece of fish. It's not like I've got hut out there.
It's not commercial.
No, I'm not.
You're not stinking out the block.
No, I'm not a problem in the neighborhood. like a meth lab. It's a fish smoker.
Where do you live? I live in the smoked fish region. Yeah. Oh, I know. I've been there. It's horrific.
Oh, you live near
who is that guy?
Yeah, that Jew who smokes a fish. Where does he think he's
Mark Maron.
Yeah, that's him.
Smoked fish guy. Yeah. It's a nightmare.
So what? So then, like, looking back at the whole operation of your life, I mean, which movies are you like, that I nailed it, I nailed that one?
Oh, I don't think you ever really nailed
come on.
No, there's always something, there's always a flaw, but you know, nothing's perfect. And
when did it get close?
I don't know. Look, it's for other people to judge.
Your experience.
No, I'm mostly mortified by watching myself.
Huh, still.
And I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy watching myself.
Really?
But if other people enjoy it, then I'm happy. And the thing about Rams is that I've had such warm response to it. And people have been getting hold of me and said, you know, it's the sort of film that makes you feel better about things.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of a gift in these rather bleak times. And I have to tell you, I've been looking at a lot of recent movies because I'm in the Academy and I need to see what's going on. And there's been some very good films, but almost universally they're a bit depressing.
Yeah.
So,
like, which ones did you watch?
I really like the suitable girl. You know, what is it? The suitable girl. That was the last one.
I don't know. Promising Young Woman. Is that what you're talking about?
Promising Young Woman.
You watched it?
Bad at titles. Yeah, that was. I mean, it's a bleak film, but it's a very good film, isn't it?
Did you watch? You know which one's a real killer? Is that? Did you watch that Pieces of a Woman?
No.
Whoa, that's rough. Did you watch that Nomadland? Did you watch that with the McDormand?
Yeah.
How was that?
Yeah, it's good. She's just amazing, isn't she? She's so remarkable, and it's a very interesting film that it's seemingly completely unstructured. You know.
Yeah.
I just watched. I love him so much. I just watched The News of the World with Tom Hanks.
Oh, was that good?
Who is an object lesson how to act on screen, and he has such sort of warmth and humanity, which just there's no one like him. You know.
Yeah.
He's really remarkable.
Yeah, he is. Really but I think. Like the thing about Rams, you know, to wrap it up on that movie, I didn't know what to expect from that movie. I didn't know where it was going to go, you know, and it's always sort of heartbreaking, you know, these deep family feuds. And it's sort of interesting to me that you come from, you know, generations of people involved with spirits. And this is a generational kind of, you know, goat movie, you know, sheep movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But all of it is so weighted, but it's so simple and everybody's so lovely in it. And the woman who plays the vet, what's her name?
Miranda Richardson.
She's great. And I haven't seen her in a while. You know, what about the guy who plays your brother? Who's that guy?
Michael Caton. He's been a friend of mine since 1979. That's the last time we worked together.
Really? It was just so, like, I just didn't know how it was going to resolve itself. And it's so emotionally rewarding, you know?
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm glad you say that. It's good. Yeah, it was, and those feuds, you know, where I am now on my vineyard, if you drive a mile down the road, there's a big old homestead, and it was built in the 1890s. I think it's a huge house, and it was inherited at one point by two brothers.
Yeah,
and these brothers grew to hate each other to the extent that they could not live under the same roof.
Mm.
But neither of them would leave. So what they decided to do was to brick it up right through the center of the house. One lived down one end of the house and the other.
Like, that's crazy. That takes a certain type of will. Let me ask you something. So is this what you always wanted to do? I mean, did you get out of show business to be like, did you buy?
No, I bought the land. All those first three vineyards I planted, you know, we planted those grapes. We didn't, it's only the last vineyard that was established that I bought. So it's 30 years now. And it's, you know, I lead a sort of double life. I'm a Jekyll and Hyde. And the Hyde is the guy that's that's growing the grapes.
Uh-huh.
And is crazily ambitious. Dr. Jekyll is the guy that goes to work on the movies, while it might seem like a double life, it's also, I think, a sort of a balanced life. So it's somewhere between, you know, I've got one foot in the arts and the other one in the soil, I suppose.
So it's not one or the other, and you still like doing movies.
Oh, I love it.
Okay.
And I wouldn't go to work if I didn't love it. And I wouldn't be growing anything here if I didn't love it. So
it is a balance.
Yeah.
It's not like I gotta feed this bad idea that I can't seem to extricate myself from.
I think there were times when my ex-wife would have said that, yeah.
Oh yeah.
What are you doing? What do you think you're doing, you crazy man?
Well, I tell you, man, it was really a pleasure talking to you. It made my night.
Thank you, Mark. It's lovely to see you. Lovely to talk to you.
Yeah. We'll do it again sometime, but I think you got other stuff to do.
Thank you so much. It's lovely. It's lovely to see you.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.
Okay. Bye now.
That was fun. I really enjoyed talking to Sam. The film is called Rams. It's definitely a sweet movie to watch. Highly recommend it. All right? Dig some hard rock riffage. boomer lives. Monkey, La Fonda. Cat angels everywhere, man. Hey, folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.